We are so excited to welcome an author into the studios this morning. We get to chat with authors all over Minnesota as a regular part of Northland Morning, but it's just great when we have the opportunity to have somebody come into the studio and talk in person. She wrote a book called Blisters. In parentheses. It's a, just look at it online. It'll be cool. You'll get it. How I Walked from Mexico to Canada One Summer. And Gail is in our studios this morning. Gail, good morning. Thanks so much for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you.
So I'm a person of a certain age, and I was raised not necessarily to accumulate stuff, but I certainly did. I'm one of those Americans that's drowning in junk. And I was also raised to get a job and stay there and have a pension and have insurance. And as a single parent, that became something I really kind of had to do anyway. So the first thing you did was you quit your job to take this trip. And I'm interested in understanding more about a person who says, man, I am thrown over the traces and I'm going to do this thing that I need to do. Tell me about that decision. Was that frightening for you?
It was a little bit. It's actually something I've done a fair amount in my life, just kind of thrown caution to the wind and tried to do something that just seemed interesting to me. But this was one of the few times where it was actually a little bit scary because I was just on the verge of turning 40 when I took this trip. And pretty much all of my older female friends had told me that if you quit your job when you're a woman in your 40s, it's very hard to find a job as a woman in your 40s. And so it was a little bit scary, but I also figured, well, I'm not getting any younger and this won't be any easier when I'm in my 50s. So I went for it.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So you took this journey. Had you read at the time that you took the journey, had you read Cheryl Strayed's Wild? Because it sounds a little bit on the surface, a little bit similar. It doesn't sound like you were necessarily driven by the same kinds of crises that she was driven by, but there are definitely some similarities. When that book came onto your consciousness, did you go, oh, hey?
Well, actually, that book, so I had already planned to take the trip, and then that book came out, I think, in March, the same year that I started the trail. So I started the trail in April, but I had been planning it before then. So I actually didn't know about that book until I was almost starting the trail. It wasn't released until then. So it really wasn't on my consciousness. And the one way that it did kind of affect me was I had actually thought that I would write this book. No one had really written at that time a sort of a popular book about the Pacific Crest Trail, and I thought maybe I would do that. And then all of a sudden, this mega bestseller came on the
and
scene.
And you're like, come on.
So, but you're right. I mean, her book is more of a memoir, and it's about her dealing with a lot of pain and loss, whereas my book is kind of just an upbeat journey. I really, really enjoy backpacking, and that was my motivation as opposed to, trying to heal or find myself.
Well, it also sounds like you were a lot better prepared in the sense that you kind of, I mean, part of her book, too, is a person who puts themselves in a situation that they're utterly unprepared to deal with. And it sounds like you kind of knew what you were doing.
Well, okay, yes, but if you go back to my very first backpacking trip about 20 years earlier, you know, my pack did not look that much different from hers. And I say that because sometimes people give her some grief for, oh, she had all these ridiculous things. Well, by the time I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, you know, I had it reasonably figured out. But the first time I hiked, my pack looked a lot like hers.
I think we need to be kinder to people in their first time trying a new venture because nobody gets it right the first time. And if you shame somebody or make fun of somebody for, oh, you tried this and you looked like a goofhead. We want people to try things and we want people to be adventurous.
And I do talk about that in my book as well, that there are different styles of backpacking and there really is no quote unquote right way to do it. And in fact, when I first started backpacking, there was this expression in the hiking community, which was much smaller at that time, which was, everyone hikes their own trail. And it just kind of meant, you know, like we all are out there for our own purposes with our own experiences and kind of all these oddball people who hiked in all these oddball ways. And it wasn't, no one sneered at them because everyone hikes their own trail. And that expression has actually morphed over time into something that I, a phrase that I dislike, which is now people say, well, hike your own hike. And it's kind of, it's a little bit more aggressive, kind of more like, oh, you've got this heavy thing. Well, whatever, hike your own hike, as opposed to just accepting right. that everyone really is hiking their own hike.
There's a sense of creating distance in that mm-hmm. and sort of pushing someone mm-hmm. away mm-hmm. as opposed to the first one, which is, as you mentioned, a lot more accepting. Mm-hmm. You met a lot of fascinating people
yes.
hiking their own trails.
Yes, indeed.
Tell
yes.
us about a few of them.
Oh, well, there was my friend Rabbit. Oh, so I should mention that on the Pacific Crest Trail, as well as a few other long distance trails, there's sort of a tradition of giving people these trail names. And so, for example, my trail name was Nightingale. So Rabbit, she was hiking with her pet mouse, Ella. Another hiker named Train was hiking in a series of 26 wedding dresses, and he is a fairly tall guy, about 6'4", I would guess, and most women are not. And so you can imagine how these wedding dresses fit him.
I think that a cocktail length sometimes or a nice ballerina length is an attractive look. One would jump to the assumption, perhaps, that your friend Train was working out some kind of romantic angst. Did you have the opportunity to talk with him a little bit about why the wedding dresses, or did,
you know,
was the idea that
what
he
kind
is
of answer can there really be to that question, right?
It's I can think of a million, and they're all fascinating. But or was the idea on the trail that he is hiking his own trail?
That's how I approached it. I was just like, okay, that's Train. He has a new wedding dress every so often, and some of them are quite fetching, and some of them, I have to tell you, were not.
Do you suppose he met somebody special on the trail who maybe was able to easily envision him in a wedding dress because of his current hiking costume and just went, you're the bee's knees? I mean, wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would have been a great story. That would have
been wonderful.
Yes.
So how about your own hike? Did you go by yourself or did you have any kind of a companion or four-legged with you?
Yeah, so no, I started the hike by myself, and I hiked about the first 1,000 miles on my own. And at that point, I fell in with a Norwegian fellow named Knut. And we had similar hiking styles. And we ended up hiking most of the rest of the way together. But I started and did the first 1,000 miles, entirely on my own. So,
well, you know, the Minnesotans can find those Scandinavians, man. We've just got a radar for them. And
Yes. And in fact, actually, we later on the trail, we later met up with his second cousin, who is a Duluthian.
So. Oh, for heaven's sake.
So she flew out and met us.
And you just went, I'm trying to just kind of get away for a little while, and I really can't seem to do that. So when you came to the end of your trail, you'd had this hike. Wonderful experiences for the most part. You were well prepared for the hike, and so it wasn't a series of boot dramas and throwing boots off mm-hmm. cliffs and trying to resolve angst and, mm-hmm. and various issues. And you said to yourself, and now Cheryl Strayed's written this memoir. What was it that made you, and had you written before? I mean, was writing already a part of your life?
Well, I had done some writing for personal purposes and then for some magazines and journals. So when I started the hike, like I said, I kind of had decided, well, maybe I won't bother writing a book because there's already this really great, well-written book out there. But after I finished the hike, I realized that it was true that I had no intention of trying to find myself or heal trauma or anything when I went out on the hike. And yet it did transform me incredibly. It really gave me a powerful sense of optimism. It made me feel more connected to people and to the country. And so I don't think that can only be done through hiking. I think it can be done through people following their dreams and being kind to one another. And I thought, well, that's a story that maybe I would like to tell. And so that's what I hope the book Blisters conveys.
I'm interested in the idea, I'm really interested in optimism right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that I know are not optimistic. A lot of the things that I hear through newspapers, television, radio, social media does not make me feel optimistic. I'm really interested in trying to explore whatever someone says. I feel optimistic about this. Tell me more about it. Tell me. Mm-hmm. I want to know the secret. Mm-hmm. What is your sense? Where did this sense of optimism come from? Where was it? If you trace it back to its roots, where did it originate?
You know, I think it really came down to being with other people in a context that allowed for it. And so I think we tend to surround ourselves with people that we perceive as being like ourselves. And in doing that, everything else becomes scary. And when you actually break out of that bubble and you just hike with someone, you may hike for 300 miles before you even get a glimpse of what their political views are. You might know all about their diet and their bowel movements and, you know, these really fundamental things about people. Or, you know, before you find out sort of what their vision for, you know, 2030 is or something. And so you find that there's a lot of ways to be kind to one another and to really engage with each other on a human level. And in fact, you know, I know that there were people who were, you know, viewed things very differently than me, but who absolutely would have done anything for me in that backcountry. And that is a really powerful feeling.
And so maybe the question is to just put yourself in a different context mm-hmm. every so often mm-hmm. so that you're not in a place where these divisive issues are the place where you're meeting people.
And allow yourself to be helped by other people, I think, and to offer help. Because everywhere I went on the trail, what I thought would happen would be that I was going to go out there and be this rugged individualist taking care of myself. But in fact, I was totally dependent on other people, even though most of the time I was by myself. When I would go into town, someone would give me a lift or offer me some food or, you know, people I didn't know, cousins who I barely had ever met, you know, sent me care packages. Friends poured in messages. And I'm not someone who really accepts help easily, but that's kind of part of the human condition. And I think we have to do that to remain optimistic and to see each other from a standpoint of beauty. And so,
you know, it's really a gift to give another person to allow them to help you.
Mm-hmm.
If you are ever ill or in a situation where you have to accept a lot of help, mm-hmm. you suddenly realize that what you want more than anything is to be of use mm-hmm. and to offer help in return.
Yeah.
And when you have an opportunity to offer help, it is a real gift to know how to accept that help graciously because you're also doing something for the other person.
And I talk about that in the book because when I initially started, I was getting so much help from strangers that I started keeping track and I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do to be a good person. When I get back, I'm going to do the same amount of good deeds for strangers I meet. But like within a few days, it was just piled so high. There was no way I could have kept track. And I realized I'm missing the point. The point is just to be a good person and just to generally take an interest in other people and try to help when I can. So,
well, and I would imagine that you're more aware of these opportunities to help now, to give help and to receive help in your everyday life. And you're not going to be barreling through oblivious to those.
I hope so. I'm not sure, but I hope so.
Gail, thank you so much for joining us this morning. What a fascinating read this must be. It's called Blisters, How I Walked from Mexico to Canada One Summer. It's a tale of hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, which may sound on the surface a little similar to Cheryl Strayed's Wild, but if you've read Wild, you'll really enjoy this because it's a completely different take and it's a whole different perspective about a journey that once again, though, proved to be transformative. Thanks again, Gail, for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Gail Francis, our guest this morning here on Northland Morning.